Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt Spring on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan and The Fan Sports Network. Good morning.
What is happening?
Be awesome if you did that in basketball, wouldn't it?
That's all we got, man. I'm not quite warmed up with my lungs yet to get that deep. I can't go that long.
I wasn't ready either.
I'm not prepared. It's too early in the morning for that, man.
He motivated me. I don't know what you want me to say.
I don't have that kind of
stamina.
I was
very impressed with both of you.
Go!
I don't think I could have kept going, I think. I think I can do the goal drag out.
You're a runner, man. You got long-term distances in you. You can do that one
the
for
the crazy back. Thing about those calls, though, is that that was just half of the goal call.
Yes.
He does it twice.
Yeah, there's always
and
two
they're
of
about
them.
15 seconds on both of them. So it's just
it's that quick little inspiring. Subtle. So they take that breath and then they get right back into it again. When did that – I'm being curious. I don't follow soccer enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was the first broadcast?
Where the long goal.
Yeah, where the international broadcaster, maybe it's Mexico, maybe it's Argentina, Brazil, I don't know. When did the first, like, goal stretch out call happen and everybody go, that was awesome. You should do that every time you score.
That's it. Yeah. And it hasn't really, to your point, it hasn't really translated to other sports. I don't know if you could do it in basketball because it's too quick.
Well, that's what's funny about it is, like, what if you did a dunk? But then, like, no! It's still going on, and you're still drawing out.
I mean, they've already made three other shots, dude. Like, we've already gone back and forth. There's been a couple of threes each way. You could do it with touchdown calls,
you could do it in football, for
touchdowns,
sure.
Touchdowns, because you get the touchdown, and then there's always a break. You got to get the PAT team on. You got to kick the PAT.
Yeah.
And then you go to, like, you could carry that thing on for as long as you want
okay.
in football.
So let me ask you then, because football, you're right, is the perfect sport. Also, home run, because you're rounding the
home
bases.
Run! Yeah, you could. You could easily do it for home run.
I don't know if home run is as cool as touchdown
yeah.
or goal.
Out of here!
But if somebody dared to step to a NFL broadcast, let's say in 15 years there's a new hot broadcaster out there.
Yeah.
And let's say he's half Mexican and a pay to his culture, his background, his
sure.
heritage,
his history.
His touchdown is a drawn-out touchdown. We love to play it.
Yeah.
We love to chuckle about, oh, man, that's so awesome how it is. Would we actually like it in our football game, somebody drawing out every time, touchdown? I don't think you would.
I think
you'd hate it.
To me, it's I will equate it. By the way, Google AI is telling me in the 1940s there was a Brazilian radio broadcaster
who started doing
Rebelo
it.
Rebelo Jr. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, and he is credited for being the first broadcaster to scream out the distinctive drawn out goal. So the 1940s is how far back you have to go to find the origin of it. I'm going to go with the long touchdown call. To me, it's like pimping a home run. Time and place. Okay, you're down 7-0 and you pimp a home run. You look like an idiot. It's 7-1. What do you think?
The drawn out touchdown to make it like 17-10.
You're down 28-0 and somebody scores a touchdown and you're doing a drawn. Like, I'm rolling my eyes at that. That
yeah,
looks stupid.
I'm with you there.
But if you give me, like, it's 24-21 and you scored a touchdown with 2 minutes to go to take the lead, I have no problem. Go as long as you need to go in that touchdown. That's a big deal, that touchdown right there.
Well, I think, okay, so you hit on the other part of this then. Because football now is too high scoring for it.
Yes. When you get
to hockey.
What was the final of the Mexico game last night? Was it
2-0?
I turned it off.
2-0.
Yeah. Okay. 2-0. Like, that's you know, that's good right there.
That's perfect.
If you go up 4-0, you're still doing it. I mean, I'm sure they're still partying down there, but the first two, they mean a lot because the game's basically over at 2-0.
That's a full 60 seconds worth of saying goal.
It is. It's a lot of goals.
If you're doing two drawn-out goals,
goal!
And they're 15 seconds on average,
right.
There's 30 seconds per goal.
That's a lot, man.
Now, hockey, you could do it.
Hockey, you could definitely do it.
But what I appreciate and love about hockey broadcasters, when I do watch that blue line.
Yes.
I love that a lot of them have great calls, but also understand that you got to let the crowd
kind of feel in the energy of the stadium and the noise and the,
Right. Like if I'm watching the World Cup, so I think this would be the difference here. If I'm watching the World Cup, I might get the drawn out goal, but I love the crowd shots and the energy. And oh, here's the live watch party at Mexico City. That was crazy.
The other night when John Strong was calling the, was it the Netherlands Morocco game? I think it was.
Yeah.
Dude, like in the second half, they'd have 2 minute stretches where they would just lay out and not say anything because the crowd was singing a song or doing a clap or doing a chant.
It's very baseball like.
Dude, and they're just kicking them, they're just passing it around. He's not saying anything during that entire time.
But the radio, I can understand drawing out the goal on a radio because nobody's visually seeing it. On television, it's a bit odd because I've seen it.
Agreed.
And I get the reaction of the crowd while watching the broadcast. So even in hockey. Yeah, I don't think this works anywhere else. I think soccer is just unique in the sense of we're conditioned for it.
We're ready for it. They've been doing it for nearly 100 years now.
So we accept it. I don't think any other sport this works.
Goal! There was a guy, I can't remember who, but they do the Spanish broadcast for football games, and we play those from time to time. And I want to say there was a guy that did one on a long field goal a couple of years ago when we played it. Now, I don't remember what he said.
The long, drawn-out
field
goal?
But I remember there being, it was like a game-winning field goal, and it was the Spanish call of the kick. And I don't think he yelled, good, it's good, but he yelled something, I want to say, for a long
time. And like stretched it.
He kind of tied it into the old homage of the soccer broadcast, and he stretched it out for a long time. And we found
it
quite
deep. It's so long.
It was deep and long, Joe. It was deep and long. And we dug it. We played the audio on the show.
We did play the audio. Thank you for that open. That was great.
That was well done.
That got me fired up. That got me going in a way that I wasn't prepared for, Brent.
That was well done.
Got to stay creative over here.
We all still have our John Morant hangover, you know. It's a little foggy the day after the John Morant hangover. We needed a little hair of the dog to get going, and that did it.
I somehow found myself still with John Morant takes yesterday. I'm like, I thought I unloaded everything.
You still
I
got more in the chamber? Pun intended.
Well, I got follow-up thoughts.
Okay.
There's some Blazer movement that happened yesterday.
We did. We added another
bid. We signed a center that nobody's heard of.
No, never heard of him before.
Nothing told me that I had disconnected from Pac-12 or college basketball more than finding out he played at Utah and he was an all Pac-12 player. And I was like, never heard of him. Never heard of him.
Who's this guy? Who's this? What?
I texted somebody and I was like, what? And they were like, it's basically the WAP replacement. And I was like, okay. And
all
then
right.
I looked into him and I was like, Utah 2019? All Pac-12? Guess I wasn't watching.
You played with Michael Doliak and Andre Miller. Those are about the only Utah players that I can name off the top of my head, man. That's all I got.
Oh, Utah basketball players.
How many Utah NBA players can you name?
Because
I got two, Michael Doliak and Andre Miller.
Keith Van Horn?
Keith Van Horn's a good one. I forget about Keith Van
Horn. Keith Van Horn was the biggest prospect of all of them.
He was. His high socks were outstanding. They got to an NBA Finals.
I'm very proud of my younger
me. Can you name another one? Can we name an outside of the guy? Can you remember the guy's name?
Brandon Carlson.
Okay.
But with an E.
With an E.
He spells it the way I think our name should be spelled.
Ooh.
Because we're both D-O-N's.
You're Don's.
And I don't think it should be Don.
You want to be a Den.
If you want to be Don, Brandon, do that. But it should be Brandon.
Yeah, we don't pronounce it Brandon. We say Brandon.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That phonetically doesn't make a lot of sense.
Any
other Utah NBA players? Rattle around up top.
I feel like they've had a couple.
I mean, I know that they've had some over the years.
Kyle Kuzma.
That's who I was. I could see him in my head. I just couldn't place his name.
I would have totally blanked on Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah, Kuzma was pretty good.
Jakob Poeltl.
Oh, yeah.
See,
Jacob.
I don't remember Jakob Poeltl at all at Utah.
You don't remember Jakob Poeltl?
I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, Poeltl was pretty good.
Yeah.
You might have just completely emptied the
That's pretty much
there.
It. Yeah.
Is that about it? Do you look up a list of all the NBA players?
That's literally the list. At least people that people would remember.
Well,
that's pretty much it.
Rick Majerus, man.
I mean, getting 4 out of 5 is not bad, guys. You did pretty good. Better than I thought.
I was going to say, when I was a kid, I remember Keith Van Horn, and he was, you know, very hot, controversial player to discuss at school.
Yes.
And I remember just be like, not a chance he succeeds. And I remember specifically saying, you can't wear socks that high and be good.
First off,
even though he was like an all-American college basketball player who could shoot, I was like, you can't wear that in the NBA and be good.
First off, that's a little offensive to Walt Williams, okay? Little offensive.
The Wizard.
The Wizard occasionally wore high socks. Offensive.
But at best, he was what?
I mean,
the eighth best guy on a team?
How
dare
you?
The ninth best guy on a team?
The Wizard was way better than that. I feel like this is disrespectful to the Wizards, okay? How about Luke Babbitt? Are we really going to disrespect Luke Babbitt like this?
I'm just glad. Oh, Luke Babbitt.
Luke Babbitt was a high Sox guy.
Oh, yeah. Not a U.
No, he was not a U, but he was a high Sox guy.
He was terrible.
I know. Does anybody still wear the high Sox?
No.
Is there anybody left that has that look?
Well, who's the best one to rock it? It's probably Jason Terry.
Ooh.
If you're not counting like 70s World Be Free stuff.
Is he better than Keith Van Horn?
Jason Terry?
Yeah.
That's not even remotely close.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Positive?
I might go this far. You ready for this?
How are we
on
gauging
a Wednesday?
This? Yeah.
I would bet my entire life that Jason Terry versus Keith Van Horn in a poll.
Who is the better basketball player?
Jason Terry's far and away the better basketball player.
Keith Van Horn.
What are we talking about here?
I mean, if you look at the numbers, Keith Van Horn in the peak of his career average, better numbers and better career numbers than Jason Terry.
Come on.
I'm just giving you numbers.
No,
what else do you want from me?
It.
He averaged 16 points per game in his career. Jason Terry averaged 13 points per game in his career.
You know what you're doing to me?
What am I doing to you?
Jalen Brown's seventh best player on a team. Using your analytics numbers.
I'm looking at the points per game.
I watched him play.
Right here in front of me.
Jason Terry's
a better
basketball player.
How many teams did Jason Terry lead to the NBA Finals, huh? We all know Keith Van Horn was the straw that stirred the drink in New Jersey.
Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson, Kenyon Martin.
They don't go anywhere.
Was Keith Van Horn the fourth best player on that team?
They don't go anywhere without Keith Van Horn and his high Sox knocking down threes, okay? They don't go anywhere. Guy shot 39% from three in 2004. He's a sharpshooter. What are you talking about here?
That's great. Wait, was he was on the finals teams, right?
I'm pretty sure he was. What year did New Jersey go to the NBA Finals? It was early
2003.
2003? Yeah, he was definitely
there.
Oh,
wait, no. Hold on.
He was in New Jersey from 97 until 2000.
No, it'd be 03-04. No, 02-03, because the Lakers beat him and the Spurs
yes.
beat him.
He might not have been on the NBA Finals team.
I don't think he was on the Finals
he
team.
He might have been gone after I think he was in Philly that year. He got dealt to Philly.
Jason Terry, come on.
I mean, they would have won the NBA Finals if they still had Keith Van Horn.
I can't believe I'm debating the dumbest topic possible at 6:12 a.m.
How many seasons in Jason Terry's career did he average 20 points per game?
I feel like you're doing a trick question thing, and I'll say one.
Zero.
Yeah, I felt like that's where you're going.
You know how many Keith Van Horn had? Two, if you round up.
How many titles does Keith Van Horn have?
We're doing titles.
I mean, like the sixth man of a Dallas Maverick title team.
Bill Russell's better than LeBron. Get those rings.
You know, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. I can't change
Robert
that.
Ory's better than Michael Jordan.
It don't mean a thing unless you got,
yeah,
that,
got
ring.
That ring. This is a good first poll question of the day.
That's a terrible poll.
Who is the better? We need to throw this out for a societal experiment. Who had the better NBA career? That's our first poll question of the day. Right out of the gate.
What
at
are 6:12, we doing here?
Who had the better NBA career?
It's Jason Terry.
Okay, I just said.
I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do? I have a coach group chat.
Yeah. Send this one in.
Because I've helped at Meadow Park.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to text this right now into the group chat.
See what the responses are.
To see where coaches would go.
Keith Van Horn.
And I'll be very curious to see if it goes racially.
Jason
The
Terry.
White coaches chime in. Well, it's got to be Keith Van Horn.
I mean, how do you not put Keith Van Horn in that conversation?
Okay,
Poll, question is up. Who had the better NBA
what
career?
What a dumb poll question we are doing.
Keith Van Horn or Jason Terry.
Unbelievable.
You know whoever never got yammed on like Jason Terry did in a masculated?
Keith Van Horn absolutely has been yammed on.
Nah, he's too big. He's too tall. He's too athletic.
What is he listed at? 6'8"? Or 6'6"?
What is his height on Sports Reference? 6'10 on Basketball Reference.
Keith Van Horn is listed at 6'10".
He was a sharp shooting power forward.
This is what I'll say.
Yeah.
If Keith Van Horn could exist in our basketball world today,
yeah,
like make him a college prospect going into the draft, Keith Van Horn is an absolute
great
player.
Yeah, that guy's getting almost a max contract because he's 6'10 and he could shoot.
Yes, like absolutely.
Those guys are they don't fall off of trees very
he's
often.
He's one of those, he missed the win. He's Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
He's Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah. He had years where he shot, I mean, his career from three was 36%, but he had some years in there with like Milwaukee in 03-04. He shot 45%
from
three.
You might have just swayed me. Did I just,
Did I just win the argument?
Myself.
I think I did.
Just swayed the other way.
Jason Terry's a tiny little guard, dude. They're a dime a dozen. 6'10 sharpshooters. They're not out there
What's
very
Jason
often.
What's Jason Terry's three-point percentage?
In his career?
Because both of these guys missed the three-point window.
I will say this. For Keith Van Horn in the year he shot 45%, he took three a game. So,
yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying. Well, that's the lead. That's not Keith Van Horn.
3-point percentage for Tarik, higher in his career, 38%.
There you go.
38.
About four
a game.
Yeah.
For the average of the career. He did have some years, though. In 04-05 with Dallas, he took three a game. He shot 42%.
Yep.
Next year, he took five a game. He shot 41%.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm disrespecting Jason Tarik.
What were his averages in the 2011 season when they won that title?
2010, 2011, he averaged 15 points per game.
Pretty good.
2011, 2012, 15 points per game.
Yeah, so it'd be the 10-11 season, I think.
The tough part for Jason Tarik is he's got the back end years that kind of weigh down the career averages.
He hung around the last four years. Well, I mean,
and
see Braun dunking on him in Boston.
Yeah, the last 5 years were not great for Jason Tarik. Not playing a lot of minutes back in the day.
There was no more evidence of anger from one player to another than when LeBron dunked on him when he was a Celtic for beating him in the title.
Yes. Like, this is payback for
that
you.
That was...
Right? I remember.
That was him. That was Jason Tarik. Right. Or that was J.J. Barea. That was Dirk. That was every Maverick possible in his brain when he landed that dunk.
I'm not forgetting this moment.
I can't believe you beat me.
This is 10 years of built up anger and aggression taking out on Jason Tarik.
One of our listeners sent us a tweet early this morning, which I always appreciate people chiming in at 6:01.
Right out of the gate
5:58 a.m. Yeah. That makes me so happy.
Good morning, you psychos.
And it was a picture of the traffic. And it was like, I think the week's done. And it's green literally everywhere. And I'll say, as I drove in, I was like, dude, got here kind of quick.
Things are a little light right now.
There was nobody out there.
I mean, we had this. I asked the boss that earlier this week. Where does this week rank in terms of being unproductive?
Yeah.
And I think he said not higher than Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving week's a big deal. In terms of not doing work.
Thanksgiving week, I'm convinced, is productive because people know it's a back-to-back holiday wave, so yeah. They want to get stuff done before the end of the year.
That's a valid point. I see your argument. Christmas is obviously the creme de la creme. It takes the cake. That's number one. Nobody does anything the week of Christmas. This is definitely in the top three of the most unproductive weeks of the year because Friday's the holiday.
Is this beat March Madness?
Yes, I think it does. I think it does. I mean, March Madness is a big deal for people in our bubble. 4th of July is a big deal for everybody.
Let's see if I can find something like that.
See if there's like a Business Insider article of the weeks. Like my brother's company, they just shut down for the week because they understand that, one, a lot of people are going to take days off to begin with because it's the 4th of July and people are going places. And it's like, well, what's the point of having 20% of our workforce here for 3 days and everybody's going to be leaving the office early and nobody wants to be here and you're calling clients? Like, no, people are out of pocket this week, man. It's 4th of July.
So take this for what it's worth. It's Google AI, right? Yeah. We're just using the first thing we use.
The robots will answer.
I almost want to use Bing right now just to like.
We would give a Bing in there.
See if Bing gives me different results.
What's the Bing say?
Yeah, holiday slump is the biggest one with the Christmas New Year combination that usually hits people.
Yes, it does.
This one says daylight savings. Hangover.
Oh, get out of here.
Says, according to an Entrepreneur magazine article, 43% of workers report the week following the end of daylight saving time is their least productive.
That's stupid.
Marked by a spike in mistakes, as they note themselves.
You're not filling out your TPS ports correctly?
Also,
because you lost an hour of sleep?
Says, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, many employees less engaged, a staggering 26 million employees miss work or slack off. The day after.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not working in, like, retail or picking up garbage or the restaurant industry, like, outside of that, who the hell works on Black Friday?
I think this week
doctors,
is definitely
doctors, obviously.
I'm not seeing an article on the 4th of July
week. I'm putting it in the top three of the most
unproductive
weeks of the year.
Yeah, for sure.
And the beauty of us is that it's actually, in terms of an unproductive week, it's a busy week in the sports world.
Because we get free agency.
There's free agency in the NBA, and that creates a lot of chaos. But outside of that, this is the week everybody's looking forward to Saturday, man.
Well, happy July 1st. I can't believe July's here already, man.
We made it, man.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
It is Bobby Bonilla Day. Football's another day closer. Yep. It's right around the corner, man. It's almost here.
It'd be so cool to wake up every July 1st with just $1 million deposited.
Hello. Oh, I made $1.7 million today.
I would actually, if I had a situation like that, I think I've decided that, like, if I had $1.19 million hit my bank account every July 1st between now and 2035.
Wake up, roll over, look at your account.
I'm making a crazy purchase.
Ooh, every July 1st.
Now, I'm not talking like 800K of my million.
Right,
but
right. Go buy a Rolex, you go buy a car, you go buy
a kick-ass vacation for like 18 grand.
That guy wanted life, man.
You have to do something to celebrate how smart you, your agency, your management, how everybody was able to go, yeah, we could take that lump right now. We could stretch this bad boy to 1.19 until 2035. What year did he agree to that?
What year did the Bobby?
1999? I think like it was 2000?
I'm going to see when did the
You have to think about how smart that was in the moment to say, oh, yeah, I can, for the next 35 years, take the 1.19. I think we've looked this up a million times, and I always forget it, versus taking, what was it, $15 million or something crazy
like
that?
It was something like that. So the deal originated in 2000. The Mets bought out the remaining $5.9 million on his contract, and instead of paying him then, they agreed to defer it with 8% interest.
Yeah, that's right.
So he didn't start getting paid. So he was bought out in 2000. The payments didn't start until 2011. That's when they started, and they run all the way through 2035.
So he had his business partners.
Whose idea was that in New York?
Well, but it's $1 million. It's nothing to them.
I know, but still.
His business partners deserve a lot of credit. I'd love to talk to his business partner more than him. Like, he's been interviewed before about it, and he's like, yeah, man, it's great.
That's pretty cool, dude.
But for somebody in his circle to go, you know, I know it sounds very far, 11 years, but 11 years from now, the clock starts from 11 to 2035. You get $1 million every July 1st.
Nearly 25 years, you get $1 million every year.
Smart move.
That's a brilliant move right there. And it's the opposite of, like, you get a lot of those, like, man, I was offered, you know, Nike stock in 1987 and I turned it down. And what would that have been worth? Like, you hear a lot of those kind of stories. This is the opposite. $5.9 million in 2010. Or in 2000 when you get bought out, that money's probably gone by now, but instead he's getting paid every year.
It's a vacation day for me. Like, every year I'm letting all my friends and family that I care about know that on July 1st, we are going on a vacation and we're going to eat good.
We're eating a good meal.
Because I'm
inflation
feeling
great. Be damned. I just got $1 million, baby.
What inflation? 1.19 million?
It's all a good life right there.
Well, we got a busy show today. Jason Quick's going to join us at 8 a.m.
Yes.
Got a stat or story ahead for you. Happy July 1st. Let's get it going. Dirt and Sprague 105.1.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The fan. Well, we had some movement in the association. We'll get to that today. Talk a little Blazers at 7. Dive into some of their moves yesterday and then some follow-up stuff.
By the way, we got some other High Sox candidates.
Okay, I'd love to hear the High Sox
there.
Guys. Yeah.
Where did it go? Nick Van Exel.
Nick Quick, yeah.
Nick the Quick's a good one.
That's an all-time Blazer legend, Nick Van Exel.
Yes, it is. Glenn Big Dog Robinson.
Oh, Big Dog.
Good pull. He might be the best. And Gary Trent. Also thrown in there as a
Gary
High Sox guy.
I remember, you know, it's funny how many of those guys were Blazers. Walt Williams, Gary Trent.
We got a lot of High Sox guys.
Yeah.
Luke Babbitt, legend.
Luke, wait, hold on.
Retire the number.
Gary Trent, Walt Williams,
yep.
Luke Babbitt.
Yep.
What was the other one
Nick
in there?
Nick Van Exel.
Nick Van Exel.
He was a High Sox guy. He played for the Blazers.
There's six High Sox guys and four of the six played the Blazers.
That's a good look, man. That's a good look right there.
It's not a good look.
Come on, bring it back.
It's not a good look.
Have it was never a good
pulled
look.
Pulled your socks up on a shorts day?
It's a horrible look. It's one of the reasons I wear flip-flops so much is I think I look stupid with socks and shoes on.
Really?
When I wear shorts.
Your legs?
I got short, stumpy legs, dude.
I got kind of chicken leggy kind of situation, but yep. I don't want my socks too high. I also don't always wear ankle socks.
There's a balance there.
Yeah.
Where you don't want them too high, but sometimes the high socks okay. I don't like the no-show socks. I can't do that. I can't rock like the boat shoes with no-show socks. That's a horrible look for me.
You don't like the shoes with no socks?
I'm not a shoes with no socks guy. It's not good. You're just asking for athlete's foot, man. Now I need tough connect.
You can go vote on our first poll question of the day if you're wondering why we're bringing up high socks. And somehow we got into a debate of who had the better NBA career, Keith Van Horn or Jason Terry. I feel very vindicated right now.
Hey,
it's early.
It's early.
It's early.
Okay. The mail-in ballots have not even begun being counted yet. We got a long ways to go.
Well,
here.
I'll tell you right now, if those come in late, going to tell you that
the
that's
Supreme
fraudulent.
Court ruled that's that fraudulent. I can send my votes in on election day, and whenever we count them, we count them.
Nope.
Okay. The Supreme Court ruled.
You know what? Not doing the rest of the show until you rule that you're not allowed to count those
until
votes.
Until we get a reversal of that
I'm
decision.
Out on doing the show.
Nope, I'm out. Not talking the rest of the show.
Boy. World Cup wasn't as good yesterday as it was the day prior.
It kind of sucked yesterday.
But what I would say is, as I've noted before with other teams in country, man, seeing the emotion, to see the Mexico team win their first knockout round stage game in 40 years.
That blew me away, to be honest with you. As somebody who doesn't follow soccer closely, and I saw that, if you would have asked me when was the last time they won a knockout round game, I would have never guessed 40 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, as a child, we used to regularly be like, oh, yeah, Mexico's dominating soccer.
Mexico's pretty good.
I had no idea if that was true or not.
I felt like they always whooped our ass, but maybe that's not the biggest barometer of being good because we've been pretty bad for a long time. That was a surprising stat to me.
I think I read that 3 people died from the celebrations just because of how many people were gathered at these public square places to celebrate. Like, when they had goals, when they had to score their first goal, did you see the live watch party areas?
I did. They went insane.
It was
insane.
It's nuts.
There was a guy.
We couldn't duplicate that for anything. That was nuts.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to die tonight if we win our game.
No.
I don't think that'll be the case. Although we will certainly be in tune and there will be watch parties everywhere. The reaction during the stadium was awesome. Like, that atmosphere was great. It felt like Mexico City was going to explode. And then you get the aftermath of it where everybody's basically burning the cities down. In Los Angeles, there was like fireworks getting launched into buildings and stuff. Got a little chaotic. I think my favorite celebration moment, though, and I chuckled of like, why would you even be there? Did you see all the random people at baseball games last night wearing Mexico jerseys reacting in real time? Which, like, it's funny to look at, but also if that's... Go home and watch the game. What are you doing at a Dodger game right now?
Well, Dodger tickets aren't cheap. Probably bought them way too long
ago.
Yeah,
not knowing if your team was going to play that day. Yeah. But there was a guy sitting like right behind home plate at the Dodger game who just stood up in the middle. The pitcher's just in his windup. He just stands up. Yeah! You just see him in the background as the pitcher's about to throw a pitch. Like, what's he? Oh, Mexico scored a goal. It's 1-0. Okay, yeah. Watching on his phone.
I love it, man. That's the part of the World Cup I've enjoyed the most, is just watching how genuinely emotional and happy a lot of these countries and fans are. Now, we have a match today.
We do. It's match day to us.
It's match day. We're playing Bosnia-Herzegovina.
We're a massive favorite. That's about all I know.
I read a little bit about this. There's a guy on Bosnia's team that was born in Wisconsin.
Oh.
So it's a very conflicted situation there.
Okay. I'm assuming Bosnian heritage.
Right.
Parents or grandparents?
Yeah, I believe I read that he was born in Wisconsin and ended up moving over there.
Oh, okay.
So I can't pretend to tell you a whole lot about the ins and outs and the depth.
Yeah.
What I would say is we're sitting in the first time in what feels like a long time, real pressure-packed situation here.
If we lose tonight, it's going to be a disaster.
We are, according to every book, we are a minus 700 as I tell you that right now. A minus 700.
That is such an overwhelming favorite.
To win that match.
Yeah.
And we're in the knockout round, so Bosnia sneaks up. Goodbye, World Cup. We'll see you later.
Dude, the World Cup has been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. The atmospheres have been great. Yesterday's games weren't great, but that's going to happen, right? The atmospheres were still really solid and fun games to watch, at least early on.
You can't match having 2 games the extra stoppage time of the other match.
I'm also not going to sit here and pretend as if a big part of my interest in the World Cup has been the United States and the way that they played. Like, us being looking to be competent and good has been a big driving force in like, all right, let's get into this. Maybe we're going to go on a run. If we get knocked out tonight, that has to be. Now, we can talk to, like, Footy Patrick or get some soccer fan takes on this. That has to be one of the worst losses in men's soccer history.
Well, I think
as a minus 700 favorite with all the momentum built and it's a World Cup on your home soil and you got a nice little pathway here, like, you can't lose that game tonight.
According to this article I was reading, says the Americans are looking to change the narrative on Wednesday, attempt to win their first World Cup elimination game in 24 years.
Yeah, sure.
Has it been that long?
Has it been that long?
That's a little longer than I thought.
I'll throw a crazy one at you in terms of
the Americans' last and only knockout win came on June 17, 2002, when they defeated Mexico in the round of 16 in South Korea.
The other wild thing is wondering what the number will look like today. Tonight's game against Bosnia will be the first time the United States men's national team has played a World Cup knockout stage match live in prime time in the history of the World Cup. Like primetime American television time.
It's crazy.
Because every other time you've gotten to this point, it's been in different countries. It's been in whatever, you know. So this is the first, like this number tonight is going, what time's the game start? 6 o'clock tonight, I think?
I believe you have that right.
Yeah, 6 o'clock tonight. So that, I mean, the number is going to be huge. The country's behind the team. I don't think they're going to lose. I don't know anything about Bosnia. You just can't lose this game tonight. And if they win down in Santa Clara, man, the energy's just going to keep growing and growing and growing.
England faces Congo today and Belgium plays Senegal. Those are your other elimination games. The U.S. has one win in 21 games against European teams with seven draws and 13 losses since making it back to the World Cup in 1990 for the first time in 40 years.
So this isn't a good, this is historically speaking.
Historically speaking.
It's a bad matchup for us.
Well, I mean, to get to the round of 16.
It's a big accomplishment. That was like.
This is where Footy Patrick would tell you he thinks they're tapped out.
Yes.
Now, I would argue maybe the bracket's gone your way if you play Belgium.
Right. If you play a different team today, you're not quite
going to be
a
favorite again,
way.
I guess. If not, you'd be right there in the conversation.
Right.
It probably doesn't line up for you well. I think I saw the bracket. If I have it right, it's either a Croatia, Portugal, or Spain if you move on from the 16 into the 8. Yeah. But, dude, I mean, you get to the round of 16, I think you've given fans everything they could have asked for. And if you have the right matchup, now it gets like, oh, my God, could this be the Cinderella story? We just watched Germany get eliminated.
We did. They're out.
Yeah, there's been worse losses for the national team, like to the point of not making the World Cup.
Sure.
Like I remember I think it was the Trinidad-Tobago game that they, if they had won, they would have gotten into the World Cup, and they lost that game, and that was the, what are we doing?
How did we get this bad?
So there's a lot of pressure. And I feel I relate this to like my fandom with like BYU football. Like you're never comfortable in any game involving this team, involving the U.S. national team. So just brace yourselves. You could get heartbroken tonight.
We can't
tonight,
lose this game.
We can't lose this game.
Come on.
You can't tell me
we're a minus 700.
Come on. You can't have
my football brain, my college football betting brain does not. Like, what is the equivalent of this upset? A minus 700. Give me a minus 700 favorite in college football.
God, I mean.
Is this Ohio State against
Maryland? No, that's probably minus 2,000 on the money line.
On the money line.
On the money line.
Ohio State, Mississippi State?
I think that's even bigger than that. How about Oregon versus Minnesota?
Yeah.
You think it'd be as high as 700?
I don't remember
they
what
played
the,
this year. Was it a minus 700 favorite?
They were a pretty big favorite.
I feel like that's like minus 450 territory.
Only for the money line, really? You don't
a
think
minus
it was that
700
high?
Is a pretty big deal,
yeah.
Man.
I mean,
I think Ohio State Maryland is correct.
You think Ohio State Maryland's right?
I think it's in that, yeah, in
I'm
that wheelhouse.
I'm going to see if Ohio State Maryland play today or play this year because there might be a line out on the game.
There might be a money line.
I'm going to try and find
already.
Ohio State, like, find me a game that they're a massive favorite in.
Okay, you seemed a little more in depth with the team.
Just a little.
How do they lose this match? You tell me how they lose this match, because all I can go off of is massive favorite, playing good soccer, Pulisic should be back. Like, I'm trying to be honest. I don't know much more than that. Like, how can we lose to Bosnia?
I think the defense is still a concern. And I know it was kind of reserves in the back line last game against Turkey, but the defense has always been the concern. They concede a goal almost every game. So that's probably the biggest concern. They just get exposed on that side of it, and also maybe the offense is kind of out of sync because not a lot of their players played in the last game.
So like a quick Bosnia goal, 1-0. It's like holy.
Well,
crap.
The pressure will be.
You're starting to feel it instantly.
Severely on them if that happens.
Okay, all right.
So they got to get out ahead, just like they've done the first every game. They've gotten ahead early, and then just either. Keep putting on the pressure, not let up, and take care of business.
Did you buy any U.S. gear for the World Cup?
I did not buy any U.S.
Has it been motivating for you to buy U.S. gear?
I did not. No, I'm not opposed to it,
no,
but it's saying, it's not really. I'm still trying to find a minus. I'm looking through college football lines for week one trying to find a minus 700.
I like that you're searching for it, though.
Dude, I really want to know like what a comp is, because that helps me understand all of this.
I mean, you know what it is. That's a massive favorite.
I know. I'm just trying to find. I want to give a comp out. Let's see Houston versus Oregon State.
Let me give you a good one.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the Beavs, Oregon State against, on the road against Houston in their opening game.
Minus 700?
You're a plus 750 on the money line.
There you go.
So it's an Oregon State. That's as close as I've found
Houston,
so far.
Oregon State.
The spread in the
that's
game is 18.5.
Plus 700 range.
18.5 is the line of the game. And if you guys win, you're a plus 750.
18.5.
18.5, yeah. Is Wegman back again this year? I think he is. I think to BYU Brandon's point, though, like this gets uncomfortable. If Bosnia scores first, this is where it gets uncomfortable.
Are you really uncomfortable,
quickly,
though, watching on TV?
I do think
so. Are you
so,
like,
yeah,
oh, no? I think I'm just like, oh, okay.
It's just because it's soccer's funky, man.
Well, especially the
like,
knockout
you could
rounds.
Get a, you could get a 1-0 lead and then just pack the paint the rest of the game. Just like, just all right, here we go.
You're not wrong.
Everybody surround the goal.
You're
you ain't
wrong.
Getting around this thing. That ain't happening. Mm. And so that's where if you jump out to a 1-0 lead, 2-0 lead in the first half, it's a party
yeah.
all night in Santa Clara. And I think you're going to blow them out. But if it's if you get like a corner from Bosnia early, uh-oh, 1-0, all of a sudden the pucker factor's there. Because there is pressure in terms of this is the most, I would say, anticipated we've been for a USA team and run in a long time.
In a long time.
Long time. It's the first time we've had hope in a long time.
Yep.
And so you fall down tonight, that's when it kicks in.
USA, Bosnia, Herzegovina tonight, 6 o'clock, Santa Clara, knockout round of 32.
It's actually 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, that's
five,
what I
ooh,
said.
Ooh, 5 o'clock, okay.
6 o'clock's that sweet spot of we're up 2-0 already.
Exactly.
That's, by the time I turn the game on at 6 o'clock, we're going to be dominating the dojo.
Book it now, write it down. By 6 o'clock,
oh God.
U.S. is going to be up 2-0.
And there's the jinx.
And way
whoa.
To go.
Whoa.
Mariners are going to win the World Series. It's over.
Well, maybe if they had a good manager, they would have. Sounds like a Dan Wilson problem.
This thing's over.
641, Dirt and Sprague. We're back with more on 105.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
One, the fan. Let me ask this question. You guys can noodle for the top of the hour. We're getting some Blazer stuff. Good morning. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy July 1st. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day.
Fantastic.
Dirt and Sprague with you, 105.1, the fan. If the Blazers end their offseason by bringing in Kelly Oubre.
Kelly Oubre, is he available?
And this is the team. Yeah. How are we going to grade the offseason knowing we didn't trade Scoot Shea assets? Didn't make the move we thought they would make. Their move is going to be pointed to Ja Morant. But I
right.
want you to noodle on that a little bit.
Okay.
Because they made a couple signings, one of them which we talked about at the end of our show. Another one many people had to Google. I was told it was a great signing, and I'm like, okay. I'll
I
take
also
your word for it.
Thought it meant more about who they drafted in the first round last year, which, you know.
Certainly not an encouraging
woo-hoo!
Sign, I would say, in year two for our draft prospects.
We like
from
to
China.
Give our guys 5 years to develop before they're yeah. ready to play in an NBA game.
Something to think about. Kelly Oubre.
He's coming back to the Child Center.
We needed a wing.
We do need a wing. He's a wing.
I think Kelly Oubre, my take is Kelly Oubre's too good looking
ooh.
To be a better player.
Ooh. He's a good looking cap.
Kelly Oubre would
he's a good looking cap.
Easily be the hottest trailblazer of all time.
Ooh.
And the ladies feel great
them.
About Josh Hart.
They do.
I
Josh
think the
Hart's-
ladies like Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, with his style
with his
and his
style,
fashion,
yep.
everything going into
his
it.
His comfortability mm. of who he is. As
hottest
a person.
Blazer of all time. That's
I think Kelly Oubre would be the hottest blazer of all time.
That's a good.
No, over, don't do that as a poll question.
Over
please.
Chris Dudley?
Yikes. No, I mean, Dudley's not awful looking, but hottest?
I want to do that as a poll question. I'm not going to, but I really want to do that as a poll question.
I mean, you know.
I mean, if we could talk about Larry Fitzgerald's butt, I got no problem talking about how good-looking Kelly Oubre is.
You know what's funny about that is somebody brought that up at the Fangolf Classic. It was a couple of listeners. They were on the par three that we're hanging out at.
Yeah.
We all were like, oh, we know Larry Fitz when we see him.
You know that ass when you see it.
You know, everybody knows
when you
it.
See those cheeks, man. They're jumping out of those pants. How did you do that? I mean, RDLs? Teach me. What's the secret?
There's a comedian named Hannah Berner.
Mm-hmm.
She's become very popular. She has a podcast, but she's got a special out, and she had a joke about football and how football, there's a secret narrative to football that she's picked up on. Tight end.
Yeah.
Quarterback center exchange.
Yes, under center.
I think Larry Fitz, us knowing Larry Fitz, is exactly adding into that narrative.
He's got a great butt, man.
Cal Raleigh's hitting .164 with 8 homers, and they've played 87 games this year. I just want to ask a question.
You just want to throw it out there? Give me the numbers. How many games?
Well, the Mariners win, and you know they beat the Angels last night. What was their final? 8-3.
I mean, they're going to be relevant all year because they're in the worst division in baseball, and they're one game above .500, and that's all that matters to them. Cal Raleigh, just for context.
How many games has he played?
He has played 55 games.
55 of the 87 Mariner games.
So he's missed 30-something games. He's on pace to, you know, probably playing about 120 this year.
But if I told you Cal Raleigh in 55 games was .164, 8 home runs, would you be like...
That's a disaster. It's a disastrous season.
So now it's been 87 games.
I mean, you went through last year and he has this historic run and he became a guy that you probably thought you were going to build around more than anybody else. And you know who's had a significantly better season and been available all year?
Julio!
Yeah,
he's hitting basically .260.
And he's having a good year, dude.
Night.
He's the same guy he's always kind of been. Mm-hmm. He's never, I don't know, I don't ever see him like ascending to that next tier of, you know, an MVP kind of player.
Hmm.
Like, I don't think the aspirations, and you always have that when you see a young guy come on and pop that way. You think about how high the ceiling could be. It doesn't mean he's disappointing in any way.
Right.
You just understand, like, dude, he's a bit of a late starter. He gets going in the second half of the year. And every year in August and September, you look up, and I want to say his numbers are nearly identical. And you could spend a month early in the season freaking out about why isn't he hitting or where are the home run numbers. But I feel like almost every year, some years it's a few more homers, some years the average is a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But it's somewhere in the 20 to 30 home run range, somewhere in the 80 to 100 RBI range if he stays healthy. And that's a great guy to have to plug in to the outfield every day. The Cal Raleigh thing is that's just a disaster. And I know he missed time. He's been banged up. They brought him back. I mean, he missed 30 games already in the season, right? So I get that there's an injury concern there. If you're hitting in the 200s or the 100s, it's one thing to survive and live with it. If you're hitting dingers constantly.
Well, the low 200s. Let's be clear here, because like
low
200s. 240 is a good average.
Nowadays, yeah, you're not wrong. If you're hitting .240, you're probably in the top 10 of Major League Baseball. But if you're hitting .164 and you only got 8 home runs in 55 games, that's a disastrous season. It's an absolute letdown.
How do we sum that up? Like, it can't just be injuries.
The hard part with it is, and I'm with you there, and I think a lot of people mentally will go there, I just need a bigger picture. So does he end up getting hot and hitting 30 bombs this year at the end of the year? And you say, well, he missed 40 games, but he still hit 30 home runs. No, that doesn't look fishy in any way. Now, the average is a massive concern. You can't, like, you were an MVP candidate last year, and you're hitting .164 this season.
Yeah.
That can't happen. The whole debate about him or Aaron Judge last season, and I know that was just a one-season award thing. It's like, dude, Judge brings it every year, and he's also banged up right now. But Judge's numbers are consistent year in and year out. That one right now was the blip on the radar for Cal Raleigh. It came out of nowhere, and now he's come back down to earth a little bit. I want to see how the rest of the year goes. I want to see what he does next year, because maybe it was a truly tough injury to make him hit, and it was, you know, he just has had a hard time overcoming it. Next year he's healthy, and the numbers return somewhat close to where they were last year.
Yeah.
It's kind of an incomplete picture right now, but if I'm a Mariner fan, I'm terrified of what I've seen.
To be fair, too, top 50 hitter, Ben Rice is the 50th in average in Major League Baseball. What's his average?
Oh, that's a great question. The 50th hitter in baseball.
Just by an average basis of ranking of average
in
baseball players.
There's got to be enough guys with a big... I'm going to say 247.
268.
Wow, okay.
Baseball's kind of turning it around slowly with the averages.
That's bad.
The 50th guy. There's a lot of 280s,
now,
290s.
Is there a minimum of bat thing in there, or how many of those guys are like 3-for-4 and then they got sent back down to the minor leagues? That's my only question.
Yeah,
that.
That's a very fair question. I'm looking through this. Most of these guys...
Or at least somewhat regular players.
Have 300 to 260 at-bats.
Yeah, and that's
so
a pretty
basically,
valid
it's
thing.
Mostly players that have played.
I mean, in your face, Kirk Herbstreit, you want to yell about baseball anymore? Look at that. We got 50 guys hitting over .267. Yeah. We're making progress.
I wouldn't know how to square it in my head. Like, to be fair on your point, like, if he stays healthy and he ends up with like
30 home runs.
See, if I'm a Mariner fan, I guess if he doesn't hit this, it doesn't really change much because he's under contract and it's going to be run back. If I'm a Mariner fan and he's at 8 right now and 87 with 55 played, if he has anything below 35, my antennas are going way the hell up.
Yeah,
and if your average doesn't get to like 230 or higher.
If you hit below 200 this year, that is a problem.
Like, what if he ends up with 18 home runs and it's like .181?
That is an issue. All of a sudden, you went from thinking you had an MVP candidate to catch your year in and year out to what?
Yeah, think about that aspect of it, too. Like, I thought, I legitimately, and I still believe this, I believe he was the MVP last year.
Yeah.
that position day in, day out, the amount of mistakes he didn't make as a catcher defensively.
The defensive metrics that back up him being really good behind the plate.
Plus what his bat meant, plus the Mariners got to the AL. Like, I think I could use all of that. How many guys have that kind of season, be that close to the MVP, and then follow it up with this?
Right.
This is – it's interesting, man. They're still in the race. They can still win their division. They won last night to beat the lowly Angels. It just – I know I was curious about last night because I saw that they were beating the Angels. So I went back and I looked at the box score. I'm like, 8 home runs in a .164 and 55 games played? I don't know about that, man.
That's not good. He's got a 75-30 strikeout to walk ratio, which is also not good either.
Loaded second hour of the radio program. We'll dive into the Blazers. They made a couple signings yesterday. And what if they only add Kelly Oubre as the rest of their offseason moves? How would you feel about that? 503-864-6326, hour 2, Dirt and Sprague, Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.